It was June 1993. Way before 9/11 had happened. Back when people dressed up to get on an airplane. Back when flying was fun, and you would talk to your neighbor, and you had to wait in line to get a paper ticket. Security was very little back then, and I was 23 years old. I had spent the summer before working in an orphanage in Yegorsk, which is a little town outside of Moscow. I was going back again to work in a different orphanage, this time in Suzdal. But this time, I knew a few things. You see, the orphanage where I worked the first summer had no toys for the children to play with. None. Well, let me take that back. They had about three or four in a glass case outside of the director's office on the first floor. That doesn't count, does it? So I was determined to go back to an orphanage, but not with my hands empty. I wanted to bring a lot of toys. All my life, when I've needed something, I've gone to the church. So I went to ask my home church that was preparing to send me to seminary. I told them about the orphanage. I said I needed toys, and boy, did they deliver. Toys piled up in the side chapel of the church. There were so many of them that I had them boxed up, and I had to enlist my parents' help, and we rented a trailer, a U-Haul trailer, to bring 24 boxes of toys with me to Russia. But I was young, and I was really dumb, and I didn't realize that there's a weight limit when you travel. You can't just bring 23 boxes on an airplane. We got to JFK Airport and we unloaded all these boxes into the ticketing area. There was already a long line of people getting on this flight to Moscow. By the time I got all the boxes unloaded, I realized I couldn't bring any of them, one of them maybe, with me. My parents and I looked at each other. "It's not time to give up," I said. "Let's start telling people." So we started telling people, "Hey, we're going to an orphanage in Russia. These are toys. They have no toys." A man in the middle of the line, an older gentleman, said, "Hey, I'm just bringing one suitcase, so I bet I can bring a box." "Great." Another young woman down near the front took a second box. Three more were taken by different people, but we still had 19 boxes. This middle-aged woman with two children opened up her suitcase. "I thought I needed a hair dryer," she said, "but I really don't care that much about my hair." She took the hair dryer out and threw it in a trash can. "Give me four stuffed animals." People started opening up their suitcases and shoving things over, and some of them started throwing away things so that they could make more room for the toys. Boxes and boxes were opened. Finally, I had to check myself onto the flight, and I left my poor parents still with a few boxes, but people were still trying to fit things into every nook and cranny of their suitcases and handbags and backpacks. People were making room for these children to have something to play with. That next fall, I would find myself beginning seminary. And one of the most important things I learned in seminary was how to read the Bible in the original languages. Now, I'm not very good at it, but I know how to look up a word. And the Old Testament was ancient Hebrew, and the New Testament was ancient Greek, and these old words, they contain so much meaning. You know, every time we translate, we interpret. And if you read the Bible in English, you're reading someone's interpretation of it. And in fact, there are so many more words in the English language today than there were back then, that every time we translate, we're taking a word that means so much, and we're trying to decide between all these little specific English words. It would be like if you took the water from a bathtub and tried to put it in a teacup. You just can't get all the meaning inside of our English words. It says in the Gospel of Luke that Joseph went to the city of Bethlehem because he was of the house and lineage of David. In other words, Joseph's family was from Bethlehem. His grandparents, his great-grandparents, he probably had uncles and aunts and cousins. And when Joseph went back to Bethlehem, he was forced to do so by the Roman government that wanted to count every person so that they could get more money from taxes. It would have taken Joseph and Mary days to walk from Nazareth to Bethlehem, but when they got there, they were expecting to go to their family home, their ancestral home. Joseph was expecting to find a place to be. Now, in the ancient Greek, there is no word for inn. There were no inns back then. There wasn't a Hampton Inn. There wasn't a Budget Inn. There wasn't a Comfort Inn. And by golly, there wasn't a Marriott Courtyard. The only thing that existed were small homes where families lived, and they only generally had two rooms. The main room where the family would live and cook and sleep all together, and a special room that in the Greek was called a kataluma. The kataluma was an all-purpose guest room. It was for anyone who came to visit, or it even could be for your animals. So Joseph went to his family home, and they told him that the kataluma was full. I think maybe we translated it as inn, because it's easier to think of an innkeeper who didn't know Joseph from Adam saying, "Hey, no vacancy, we're all reserved up. The computer's full, can't take anybody else." Because that's kind of objective and fair, right? But what Joseph really encountered was his own family saying, "We don't have any room for you. And your pregnant wife who is in labor. We're going to shut the door on you. There is no room for you. We will not make room for you here." I've been to Bethlehem before all this violence, recent violence. Bethlehem is windy, and there are little hills, little rolling hills. It's too windy for there to be this little cottage that we like to make in the manger scene that kind of looks like Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, and it's cozy. No, what they did back then was, it was very hot in the day, so the shepherds would bring the sheep into caves dug in the side of the hills where they could get away from the wind and the sun and the heat. And those sheep would be in the caves all during the heat of the day, and then the shepherds would lead the sheep out by night to graze. Joseph knew this, and so he found an empty cave that night. Probably no animals would have been around. And there in the dark, in the dirt, Mary gave birth to the Son of God and laid him in a feeding trough where the sheep's food would go. In our modern lives, we have no room for anything. I think we thought that the invention of the laundry machine, so you didn't have to wash your hand, clothes by hand, would have given us a lot of time to spare. Did that work? Do you have a lot of time to spare? No, our lives are shoved, packed full, just like those suitcases in the airport. We rush from one thing to the next to the next. Our iPhones are always crying out to us, look at me, look at me. Here's some memories from 5 years ago. You were a lot thinner back then. Look at me, look at me. Here's your favorite pair of shoes. Emails and phone calls and errands and bills. And our lives are slam-packed with stuff to do. And our minds are even more crowded than our schedules. We don't even know how to make any space in our minds. We don't know how to make room for God to come. If we do not make room in our lives for God, we will run on the hamster wheel of our crazy technology life, and our years will go by, and we will think that people different from us are awful, and we will keep going to war, and we will keep not really solving our problems, because only God can help us do that. But what if you looked at the suitcase of your day and you took out one thing? Maybe instead of jumping out of bed and straight into the hot shower, you stood by the window to see the sunrise and just breathe. What if, before you go to sleep, you just get on your knees for a moment? There are many kinds of prayer. A lot of us like to talk to God, but what if we actually made room to listen? What if we said to ourselves, make room. Make room. Make room. What if every once in a while you just pull your car over to the side of the road where it's safe and you just look at a tree? Did you know that the name Yahweh in the ancient Hebrew, it is your breath? When you breathe, you are saying the very name of God. So what if you made some room to hear yourself breathe? God is love, and God waits for you to make some room. God waits for you. And God knows that when you stop and are silent, at first there will be all this chaos in your mind. It's okay. Let it be. Between all of that, you will find some space for the light of Christ to enter. And let me tell you, the presence of the divine in your life is so potent. It's like if you drop a little orange juice in a glass of water, it'll color the whole glass. Just one moment with the Holy One, just one touch, and your life will begin to alter. It will be colored. You will begin to wake up, to realize that you stand on a moving planet hurtling through space, and that nothing in this life can you hold on to except for God. And one drop of eternity will begin to change you forever if you just make room. When I got to Moscow, I stood by the conveyor belt and I couldn't believe all the boxes that came out. But then people gathered around me, opening up their suitcases again, they began to pile the toys up. I had to get people from the orphanage to come and bring bags. We brought all the toys. And the people, as they gave me the toys, they had this light shining from their eyes. I knew that it filled them. I knew it made them joyful. Take these to the children, they said. Take these to the children. They were happy because they made room. Amen.